Thanks, Brian, so much for that reading. And I know that we did kind of make it hard for you today with all of the names in Esther. We won't have as many of those for a while. I know that we've got some grandbabies coming up soon for families in the church. And so, you know, if you want to have some nice, those kids today love unique names, right? Like, don't want to have one that anyone else has had before. So feel free to pull out today's verses and give some nice suggestions. And that should be fun. And choir, yes, definitely wonderful job today with a beautiful song. And I know that small but mighty always makes it hard, but you did a wonderful job. And I do really love to hear those times when you do songs that were written for originally other contexts, like that's a guitar and lead singer type of song. And then to have a beautiful choral arrangement and you do it so well is really wonderful. We're doing lots of wonderful things as we're transitioning into fall together as a church community. I want to appreciate and recognize again Krista and everyone else who helped with the car show last week. That was a really remarkable achievement under very difficult circumstances. And so Krista, I think, is getting a little bit of a rest today, very well earned. And I know many of you also helped getting out in the rain, setting things up, serving food, making sure that things ran well. Again, even while you were getting rained on, even while things were a little bit frustrating. So we can acknowledge, while at the same time we celebrate the fact that people were resilient and resourceful and flexible under those circumstances to have a great event, that it's also really hard to have things not turn out the way that we really would have hoped. And we can wonder, God, what were you up to? We were doing this worthy thing, this great event to have community connect together. People worked really hard on it. We even prayed that the weather would be a certain way and so there wouldn't be any rain during the event. But there was some right at first, and it did mean that there were less cars than it looked like there would have been, and I'm sure that there would have been under different circumstances, and that we wanted. And so why can't things always go more like how we would want? It's mysterious and frustrating when those circumstances happen. And we know that there are all sorts of other things that happen in our lives in addition to fun events and things that we do like this, where we have those same feelings. When there's illness that happens in our lives, death, tragedy, suffering, injustice we see all around the world, people struggling in various ways to get through things, whether it's maybe they're dealing with addiction, maybe they're continuing to have issues with finding a job that works well for them, for dealing with the criminal justice system. A lot of us are walking alongside that with hope letters. These are really big questions for our faith, for our understanding of God, and also for how we are going to live as God's people. Because we want to find that faithful course. We want to help bring God's salvation life for ourselves and for others to experience as fully as possible. But it's not always obvious how that will happen, if that's happening in times of difficulty. And so mystery is this reality of life, but that God can still connect with us in somehow. It's one of the hardest parts of human experience, especially those mysteries related to pain and difficulty. You know, most of us will like a good surprise. Here's some chocolate that I have for you didn't know you're going to have. Here's a chance to go do something that you've always wanted to do and you didn't have a chance before. But those hard surprises, we don't like to have come along. And I've thought about this a lot, like on that truly foundational level. I really like, I've got a relatively young, little over 2-year-old nephew, new nieces. I love watching little kids grow up and discover the world and go through life that way. And one of the things that I've noticed, especially with that, and I don't know if you've noticed this too in watching kids, but often when kids are playing and they're not immediately close to their parent or whoever is watching them, they'll be running around, having fun, being goofy, and then something will happen and they'll fall. And kids will often sort of pause for a second before they decide how to react. So they'll fall and they'll be like, how upset am I about this? And maybe they'll look around a little bit like, is anybody watching? How are they reacting? Are they freaking out? Maybe I should freak out too. Are they okay? I'll probably be okay. Or just looking around and saying, is someone noticing? And if they see that you're noticing, then they might be a little bit easier to brush themselves off and keep going. But if they don't, they will make sure that somebody knows and notices that something's going on, even if it wouldn't have been the biggest thing otherwise. And so there's a lot of life on the big and personal scales that feels mysterious and challenging right now for many of us. There are people that we care about or people that will come into our lives who are having those same experiences, looking around, wondering, something's happened. I'm still maybe figuring out exactly how to feel about it, but I want to make sure someone notices at least. And I want to know that God is with me and cares about it. And so our next sermon series is going to be focusing on those very experiences. It'll be a chance to sit together, just like little kids on a playground. We're going to have a chance to acknowledge, all right, there are things in my life that are not going great. And that's okay. I can bring that forward. I can think about it. I can ask for support about it. And we'll do a little checking around. How does it seem like people are noticing? How does it seem like God is noticing? What is God up to? How are we going to make sense of these experiences that are hard? And how might God be encouraging us forward so that we can experience salvation life as God's family, and in the midst of whatever it is that's happening, good, bad, mysterious, frustrating, whatever it is. And sometimes in this series, we may find that we will be crying out, this needs attention and response. I need to be able to say that things are not okay now, but that there's a path forward to where they will be. But hopefully, we'll also sometimes have some experiences like those kids, where we'll learn to notice how God is moving, and we can look around and say, yeah, it's hard, but I know that someone is paying attention, and I'll find a path forward with God's help and with the support of people around me. It may not be exactly what I expected, but things can be okay. And both of those things are good and right, by the way. We're not doing something wrong when we're trying to make sure. We call out, God, this is not right. I need you to notice. And we're also doing well when we can learn to notice more of those things and see where God is moving, even if it's not exactly like Jesus. So our big emphasis for doing this will be going through the story of Esther. So we read chapter 1 today. We didn't meet Esther yet. We're going to read through the whole book throughout this fall because it's famous in particular for being the one book in the Bible where God is not actually mentioned directly. A lot of people are used to the story. It's a pretty famous one if you're used to Bible stories. Esther is secretly a Jew in the land of Persia where the Jewish people have been exiled to. She becomes queen because of her beauty. She and her uncle find out that there's a Persian official who wants to kill all of the Jews because they won't bow down to him. He's basically just personally embittered by this. And so then Esther is willing to bravely reveal her identity and convince the king to save the Jews and punish this evil official. And sorry if some of you are thinking, hey, no spoilers, but it's okay because when we're looking at Esther, we're not just trying to get the exciting story, but we're trying to find deeper meaning and things that we can learn from for our own experience, even if we aren't expecting to be queen anytime soon. Anybody, like, get called by the royal family, prince, right? King Charles needs some help or something like that. Esther is especially a compelling book of the Bible to learn how to discern God's presence and to stay rooted in our identity as God's people, just like Esther did. Even when the circumstances around us are mysterious or challenging, or potentially painful. In part, right, because the story of Esther is going through, on a big scale and a personal scale, really mysterious, difficult circumstances. And it doesn't just lay it out in these easy ways in the book. Like I said, it doesn't mention God was doing exactly this, and so then Esther did X, Y, and Z. There's discernment for her, and there's discernment for us as readers and learners. And I think that that can make it especially relatable for us, because even when we have a sense of things in our life are full of God's presence and movement, most of us, maybe some of you do, I don't hardly ever, have a narrator that goes around and says, and that is definitely when God was doing this. And so I know at every single moment, even when I feel like God is with me, that, yep, this is the exact thing that God was doing at that moment when I needed it this way or whatever else. Even when we feel like God is not absent, even when we feel like things are going well, there's still room for us to continue to discern how God moves in our lives. Then we also know that here at the church, we do our scripture readings with a nice balance between the Hebrew Bible, or also sometimes called the Old Testament, and the New Testament, so that we can see the thread of God's revelation and word over time. And because it helps to have some beacon of light and guidance when we're navigating dark and foggy situations, we'll be looking at some special statements by Jesus in the Gospel of John to go along with the story of Esther in this sermon series. They're classically called the I am statements. So today we heard, I am the sheep gate. You might recognize other ones like, I am the true vine, I am the bread of life. So we'll be looking at those throughout the sermon series as well. Because those I am statements can give us a powerful reference point for looking at how to navigate really difficult circumstances in our lives too. Jesus, using this framework, calls back to God's primary revelation to Moses before the Exodus. When Moses came before God at the burning bush and said, I want to know your name. And God said effectively, I am who I am. And that's how we got the Hebrew name Yahweh as well. It's this like deep foundational identity and faithfulness. And so Jesus, using that same formulation, is showing how this is how I am connected to God. This is how I am expressing God. This is how you can understand God in lots of different circumstances. Now, it doesn't mean that it'll still be easy and obvious. We're going to hear these I am statements. Most of them are metaphors or similes. They give us pictures that help us understand a little bit. But even in verse 6 of today's passage, we heard, it notes how people heard Jesus using this figure of speech, but they didn't understand exactly what he was saying. So it's not going to definitely make everything completely simple, but it will help us in many ways to understand the foundational, consistent, faithful character of God and have some ideas that we can look to when it's harder, because we can know from Jesus saying that this is how God operates in our lives in all circumstances. So we'll get into our story of Esther now, right? We don't meet Esther yet. We meet King Xerxes, who Esther ends up being married to, and his first queen, Vashti. So it's good to know a little bit about where this story comes to us in the general context of the story of Scripture. So this is while the Jewish people are in exile. They went into exile in about 586 BC after being conquered by the Babylonians. The Persians then conquered the Babylonians and kind of took over rule of Israel. Then God had promised when they went into exile, in 70 years you will return. So in about 515, about 70 years later, some Jewish people went back and began to rebuild the temple in Jerusalem with the blessing of Cyrus and Darius, the rulers of Persia at the time. Cyrus is even actually called a Messiah, an anointed one of God, for helping the Jewish people go back to build the temple. And then more returning exiles, which we read about in Ezra and Nehemiah, go in the mid-400s BC and start to rebuild the whole city, not just the temple, but the walls and the rest of the city. And this story of Esther happens right in the middle of that. This is after the temple has been rebuilt, but before the extra cohort of people with Nehemiah and Ezra will come a couple decades after that. So there's, you can hear, if you see these ups and downs, that there's a lot of back and forth about what position the Jewish people have as people of God in the world around them. They were conquered, they were carried off, they did okay in some cases, off in exile in Babylon and Persia. Persia was allowing them to go back and rebuild their temple, so in some ways they found favor, but they could still get persecuted in and out throughout all of that time. So it's a very tumultuous time that Esther is in the middle of. And so it's important that we get this preamble to the story of Esther, where we don't even meet her yet, because it helps set up the rest of the story and helps us understand what was she stepping into when she had this opportunity to then become queen. What were things like? How did people view the Jewish people? What was she going to be worried about or feel hopeful for how things could go? How Queen Vashti, the queen before her, is treated, and what's happening in the kingdom of Persia helps us see that. And so we see Xerxes here throwing a banquet. And so if you read the whole chapter 1 of Esther, it's basically saying, Xerxes wanted to throw a party about how awesome Persia was. We have all of this stuff. We've conquered all these people. We're in charge of everything. Let's have a party to show off and celebrate how great we are and how everybody else has to do things for us. It's a party to show off and revel in wealth and power. And so if we know that, and then Vashti gets swept up into that as a person who doesn't have as much power as the king in that circumstance, we can notice a few key things that we might relate to. So first off, we want to notice how Vashti is being asked to come in and be paraded around just like another possession that King Xerxes got. Right? She's not, this is not like dignified beauty. Like, I'm so happy that I have such a wonderful queen. This is sort of a degrading, like, worse than normal beauty pageant. Like, just come in and I own you and let me and all my buddies, like, kind of gawk at you about it, right? So this is not an expression of love or support or good connection between the royal family. Who here would want to be asked to come and parade around in front of a bunch of drunk guys, right? Just because they're having a party. Not too much fun. This is an expression of injustice that's happening in the kingdom of Persia. Similarly, there's mention of the eunuchs. They are also an expression of injustice. Eunuchs were generally people that were taken from captured peoples, made eunuchs so that the king wouldn't have to worry about, I need people to keep an eye on all my women, but I don't want anything to happen with them. So I'm going to make them a eunuch so I never have to worry about that. So the fact that they were there and that was the role that they were playing is another expression of how Xerxes and the Persian Empire were not operating the way that we would hope that a kingdom would. And then also we can see that the violation of the law that is brought forward by Xerxes and his buddies and saying that Queen Vashti is doing, they're basically saying she's a lawbreaker because she's not acting enough like property enough for us. Everyone's supposed to accept their existence as just being there to satisfy what the king wants and what the king thinks is best, even if it is dehumanizing. And the reason why that's really bad and that the queen shouldn't do that to the king is because if that can happen to a king, well, then that can happen to the rest of us. We want our own mini version of having others only exist for our comfort and our pleasure and our benefit. So if the king can't do that, then how are we going to do that to other people too? If I'm just a lord, I'm going to have people who are going to question me if people can question the king. Even if I'm just the head of a family, I'm going to have people like saying, you need to stop treating me bad in your responsibility as head of a family. And if they can say that and I have to actually be accountable to that, I don't get to do what I want. And so that's why Queen Vashti is breaking the law, and that's such a threat, even if it's making other people miserable. So they call the king to cast her out, to make an example of her, and to bring in someone else that will be more compliant. Because then everyone else will stay in line for everyone else. They'll respect us. And really, I mean, we were all giggling at that. That's a really interesting idea of respect, isn't it? Sure, maybe there are times when I know that I'm going to have to do some stuff, or otherwise you will beat me or kill me. So I'll do it, but that is not respect. That is not the type of relationship that that's supposed to be fostering. That's not healthy for anyone, creating oppressors and those who are oppressed. Respect is not the description of that. But that helps us see how high the stakes are for Esther in doing anything that's going to rock the boat later in the story. And it's kind of funny, too, we can know, though, if we know the rest of the story. This is a be careful what you wish for. The king wants a new queen who's going to be more compliant. That's the we make plan and God laughs situation, because Esther's going to come in and figure out how to navigate all that in her existence and identity as a woman of God. She's going to figure out how to subvert all of those things and bring wholeness in a better way. So what is God up to when we see the world around us like this? Because, again, this exact circumstance maybe is not what we see all the time, but we can probably think of a lot of circumstances one way or the other where there are people who are like, I want you just to exist to make me comfortable and happy and let me get stuff. And I don't care if I have to disrespect you to do that. I don't care if I have to keep you from having us thriving a life in order for me to get that. Versions of that still happen all the time. What is God up to when we see the world around us like that? Jesus says, I am the sheep gate. It contrasts thieves and robbers with shepherds, and the gate is able to reveal the intentions of any person who wants to come and interact with the sheep because of the relationship they will ultimately have with the sheep. The gate reveals who sees the sheep only for their use and manipulation and to take advantage of for what they want. But the gate also reveals who is seeking the health and thriving of the sheep, who is going to have all of them cherished and valued and served so that they will have a good life, both in and out of the home base of the pen. And we know, like I said, that there are a lot of people and institutions and groups that ask us to follow them in our lives today. They want us to see the world the way that they do. They want us to treat other people how they instruct or model for us. And they'll often claim that it's a matter of making sure that we are living a good life and that we're pointing out and dealing with perceived threats. And most groups, when they do this, will make a claim to represent the right way to be, and maybe even specifically to represent God. But a lot of times we know, as people are doing this, we can see that there are different people making similar claims for us to follow them, but they have different values, they have different plans, and they're seeking different outcomes. And it's not always easy for us to know how to respond. Should we follow this person? Should we step away from this person? Should we call someone who's claiming to speak for God to repentance because they're asking for something that's unjust or not gracious? Jesus encourages us that there is help for discerning these often confusing ways that we can feel pushed and pulled to be God's faithful family in the world. Ultimately, we can say, do they sound more like Xerxes and expect us to be like Queen Vashti or a eunuch? Or do they sound like Jesus, shepherding us, serving, and seeking our thriving? Are there people that are caring about showing off their power and importance? Or is there humility in the core of who they are, seeking service? Are there people that are asking to parade us around and create a world where they like it best and it's most comfortable for them? Or are there people that are seeking to value and connect us with others? Connect with all people where they're at, and leading all of us into thriving, rather than trying to put us in positions where some of us are encouraged to exploit and degrade other people because we are special enough, and other people are supposed to just accept positions of being degraded or exploited. Jesus is the gate will be helping us to see that there are people who are trying to self-aggrandize themselves, and that while we may want to follow them, they're ultimately just being foolish. The gate shows us that's all that you're here for, is to be self-important, and we don't have to value that. Jesus is the gate will be helping us see that a desire for power and only allowing certain types of people and their experiences and perspectives to be recognized and valued is just weakness. It may make you feel strong to say things are going to be exactly my way, but it's weak if you can't be comfortable in making room for lots of different types of people to all thrive and be valued. And Jesus is the gate will help us see that every claim of perfection and every dismissal of cries for justice is just an invitation to repentance and learning for a new and saving way of life. Even when we recognize that people are not leading folks the way that they should be, even when we recognize that people are calling us to something that is for our harm and not for our good, we can actually say, this is your chance to not be a thief and a robber. This is your chance to be a shepherd. And we can help you see God's better way to move forward, and we can move forward in that together. We can probably think of a lot of things in our lives, from debates that are happening now in pop culture. There's a lot of stuff with different adaptations for movies and TV shows, to things in the world around us, the interactions that we have in our neighborhoods, in our cities, politics, all of those things that we can probably hear how there are people who are encouraging us, it's okay to just make other people be there only for you. You want people to do only what makes you feel comfortable, only what you like best. And then there are opportunities where we can be invited to follow God, like the shepherd and like the sheep gate, to say there is room for all people who God loves to be who they are and to find expression for themselves, and that we can benefit from each other's perspectives and experiences and inputs. Would have been a much better party if Queen Vashti and the eunuchs and everyone else could have just shared in the party rather than being like props. And we want to seek out those opportunities and those postures and those people that look more on inclusion and celebration of everyone rather than trying to make people property and have only value as props. We'll have plenty more time in coming weeks and months to hear more of the story of Esther. And we're going to hear more I am statements from Jesus as well. And hopefully, we'll find God using them to help us navigate even our mysterious and difficult times. And it'll help us also recognize God even in less obvious ways and find rootedness for living as God's family even when we're confused or frustrated. Because we know there are plenty of things, and there will continue to be plenty of things, that are mysterious and difficult in our lives and in the world around us that we want to or will have to, whether we like it or not, keep navigating. And there's another story that a lot of people appreciate for knowing what God is up to when we're having trouble recognizing it. You've probably heard the footprints in the sand story, right? Person looks back at their life, they see two footprints of in the sand, one of Jesus, one of them, but then sometimes they said, but Jesus, there's only one footprint, set of footprints in the sand when things were hard. And Jesus responds, well, that's when I was carrying you. And I have to admit, I've often nitpicked this story a little bit in my head, because I feel like I would say, well, Jesus, great, like you say that you were carrying me, but I'm surprised by that because I don't remember in those hard times feeling like I wasn't still walking in a really hard time. If I would have felt like, oh yeah, I'm being carried and it's so restful, I probably would have said, oh, of course, that's why there's one set of footprints in the sand, because Jesus was carrying me. I don't need to be told. But the more I've thought about it, I've come to think, well, Jesus would probably respond, yeah, of course. Do you know how hard it is to carry someone who's like thrashing around pretending that they're supposed to walk right now? That's not really very easy. It didn't work for anybody. I am trying to offer this other way of being together that's more restful to help you get through all of those things so you don't have to keep thrashing around. So my hope is that that's an opportunity that we can have in exploring this story of Esther, exploring the I am statements of John. We can figure out a way to be children of God, just like Esther being a daughter, after God's own heart. Even if things aren't obvious all the time, we can find some guidance. And we can feel like we don't have to thrash around as much. And we can find our rest in the ways that God is walking with us, carrying us even in those difficult times. Those times that it feels like it's hard to see God. Maybe we can learn a little bit together how if we stop thrashing, we'll recognize and we'll weather through those difficult times better together. Let's continue in worship with our time of offering. As we offer ourselves as best as we can.